On the last episode of Modern Practice, we discussed hospital readmissions, why they happen, and why hospitals need to reduce them. On this episode, we'll examine clinical issues and social factors associated with readmissions and discuss best practice for improving them. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal Operations and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Internist. I welcome back Todd Baker, also a principal at Vizient. Todd, glad to have you back.
Great to be here. Thank you, Tom.
So in the last episode, we mentioned clinical issues and patient social factors contributing to readmissions. So let's go into some detail here on the clinical issues first. How can hospitals address clinical issues?
You know, as we noted, the clinical issues obviously are completely central to managing a patient's readmissions. The social issues tend to be the biggest factor for the actual readmission. But to focus on the clinical issues, much of the technology that we're seeing now deployed in the healthcare environment has to do with that risk stratification process that we discussed. So as a hospital, when you're able to identify that 5% or 10% of those patients that are very high risk and have typically multiple comorbidities and chronic disease states, what we see more and more is hospitals are deploying technologies like readmission prevention nurses. These are clinically trained, oftentimes nurse practitioners, who are highly trained in managing readmission issues. And so what happens is you'll have this nurse contact this high-risk patient, in many cases, 2 to 5 times the first week they're discharged. And you continue that kind of contact with that patient through that first 30-day period to manage that real acute disease or that chronic disease state. So those are some of the technologies that we see being deployed to manage the clinical issues and manage those clinical issues post-hospital stay through that continuum.
Is there an ROI in doing that, Todd?
As we talked about in the last episode, the financial piece of this is beginning to align. When hospitals do take risks through an alternative payment model, like a Medicare shared savings process, or maybe they're in a bundled payment environment with a payer, or maybe it's with CMS, or more and more even Medicare Advantage, managing Medicare Advantage patients, those incentives begin to align because the hospital is at risk for that 30-day post-discharge stay so that they don't get more money if the patient bounces back in that 30-day period. Maybe we can talk down the line about what the industry needs to do relative to post longer than 30 days. There are certainly notions that the industry and CMS wants to move to 90-day bundles, even a year-long bundle. So I would submit that hospitals would be much more at risk for these types of patients in the future, and better understanding that clinical risk is critical to their success in that environment.
So you've mentioned the great work that Amy Botwell's done, and I can't help but feel that. And as you reaffirm, the social issues are there. I also mentioned on the previous episode that we have issues with staffing and a decrease of access to community resources. So what can hospitals honestly do to address the social factors associated with readmissions now?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And to your point, with nursing shortages and staff shortages at hospitals, it's becoming more and more of a challenge. One of the things that we've seen is there are companies, entrepreneurs, who are reaching out to fill that gap, if you will. And there's a number of companies that are supplying what are essentially non-clinical navigators that a hospital can contract with to actually manage the patient's social determinants. And these are non-clinicians, to be clear. These are going to be a layperson who's very passionate about helping patients improve their outcomes and taking care of patients. But this is somebody that's going to help arrange transportation or ensure that the patient shows up for their primary care visit or ensures that the patient has their medications. They can navigate these issues and, importantly, basically alert the hospital to social issues that may be resulting in an upcoming readmission. So that if there needs to be a clinical intervention, they might coordinate with this readmission prevention nurse to avoid that. But importantly, they're managing those kind of social determinants issues in the post-acute environment. And some of the early data in these technologies is very impressive. And we're talking about, Tom, as you know, disease states like COPD and pneumonia and CHF, for example, are experiencing readmission reductions in the order of 20, 30, 40% because they're able to navigate those social issues. So this is a real growth area and an area where hospitals really, I think, should investigate and understand better and integrate that into their services.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a great way of actually finding a partner outside of the hospital that's probably a member of that person's community to make that happen.
That's right.
Huh. So I know that you've been doing a lot of work when it comes to best practice surrounding readmission reduction. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, let me kind of take you through that. So there's really five key components to this. There's the emergency department, there's the risk assessment, there's the care management process in the hospital, there's the post-discharge planning, and then there's the post-discharge patient management. So in the emergency department, better understanding that patient through that risk assessment, so deploying that risk assessment immediately upon admission, understanding whether or not the patient would be qualified for observation status is really important. As you know, some patients don't need to be admitted. They may be observed for 24, 48 hours. You can actually tune the patient up, make them feel better, get them on the right path without admitting them. But many hospitals underutilize the observation status in that regard to help manage that patient. Importantly, the next step, of course, is that risk assessment. We talked a lot about that, but really stratifying the patients into that high risk, moderate, and low risk. One thing I would note, though, there's really a category of risk rising patients. So if you're on the high end of the moderate risk level, you may want to take a little bit deeper look into those patients that kind of categorize to that risk rising. But applying that risk assessment is critical, and using the technology to do so is important. And as a side note here, most of the tools that we see out there, like the LACE and Boost and other systems, are really fairly blunt instruments. What we see is we believe there's a big movement coming in the marketplace to actually risk stratify much more effectively on a disease state. So in fact, there'll be a heart failure risk stratification or a COPD risk stratification, which I think would be a fantastic innovation in the industry to really help treat patients much more effectively. But that risk stratification is really critical to deploy immediately on admission, but also understand and reevaluate during the patient's stay. And then during the care management environment, making sure that you have early consults with consulting physicians like cardiologists or pulmonologists, for example. Initiate your social determinants evaluation, develop your post-acute plan, and then make sure that you early consult with your pharmacist for appropriate medication management. And then one of the things we're seeing is the meds to beds environment or initiative where they're bringing the meds, the patient is being discharged with the medications, the patient and the family are being educated on their medications. So when they walk out the door, they don't have to go to the pharmacy and fill this. They actually have their first week of meds available to them. So that can be very, very helpful. And then the last part, again, is that post-discharge planning environment. Every patient needs to be assigned a primary care physician. Every patient should have an appointment with that primary care physician within 7 days. And then if the patient is high risk, the readmission prevention nurse should be engaging with that patient multiple times that first week and into the 30-day environment. And then if you are assigning a navigator, making sure that navigator is actually touching the patient and to manage those social determinants in that post-acute environment. So those are some of the best practices that we see. It's a challenging process to get your hands around, but it is an effective process and you can realize reductions in 30 to 40, 50% in some of these categories.
You know, I'm actually pretty impressed by that. And I couldn't agree more that these are the areas you need to deal on. So discharge planning starts at the emergency room. It's a great time to identify where many of those obstructions are. And I can certainly see where I would want to put some of these patients in ops unit, but is that gaming the system?
It's not gaming the system. It's actually better for the patient. What ends up happening sometimes, if you're not using observation effectively, you may admit a patient for 2 days or 3 days or something that is really unnecessary. And it's wasted resources for the hospital, wasted time and commitment for the patient. Some of those patients just need to be medically managed for 12 hours, 24 hours, and then they can go home. And that's obviously a much more healthy environment for them to be in than admitted to the floor or something in a hospital. So no, there's certainly implications, but people may think that's avoiding or gaming the system, but I don't believe that's true at all. I think it's part of the process, and I think it's frankly better for the patients that it works for.
And I can certainly see where compared to large programs like Boost that have been going on for, I think, close to a decade now, by using a risk management tool, you can kind of narrow it down to the area where the investment is well worth or there's an ROI in doing it. But there's a component where it's more of a patient or even family component that I see here. I don't have any data to suggest this. It's just based on 25 years of practicing hospital medicine is that 50% of our patients are not their own caregivers. It's usually a sibling, a spouse, or a child. Is engaging them part of this process?
Yeah, such a good question. That's where this risk stratification can really help, is that better understanding that social environment of the patient and their disease state. Oftentimes that social environment may involve true family caregivers that are involved. And that means that the teams in the hospital need to begin the education process with the families at the very beginning of their stay in the hospital. So they need to be preparing the families to manage the disease in the post-acute environment or manage the social issues in the post-acute environment. And just importantly, if it comes out in this risk assessment, which is part of these scoring systems, that they have no family network, then that may trigger the hospital to start to look for community assets. Do you have other assets in the marketplace that you can tap into? Are there social services organizations? Are there churches? Are there others that can help manage these patients? And again, I go back to, these are the kind of patients that really do benefit from that post-acute non-clinical navigation. Many of these patients don't have a ride, don't have a family member that can take them to get to the pharmacy. So these are all the really important factors that have to be engaged to understand how to educate the family and find out whether or not they have family to help them, to support them and improve their care.
So where should a hospital start in developing a readmission reduction strategy?
I recommend 5 steps. And again, there's so much inertia as we talked about, but here's where you start. First thing to do is you set a goal. Think about the high impact areas that are burying your emergency department. So if you have lots of heart failure readmissions, perhaps that's where you start. The first thing is to do is set a goal. Okay, we're going to reduce heart failure readmissions. The next thing to do is to understand your data. What data do you have that's available to you to understand your performance now? How is it benchmarked? What is your ultimate benchmark goal? Do you have a best practice goal that you want to shoot for? And importantly, how do you track your progress as you succeed? So you need to inventory your data assets to better understand your performance now and how you improve. And then you actually need to inventory your resources. So in that case, we have access to these SNFs. We have access to these community environments. We have relationships with this home health agency. What is available to you to actually deploy a robust readmission reduction strategy? From there, using the data, what inventory assets are available to better understand which populations you want to focus upon. Maybe it's heart failure, maybe it's COPD, maybe it's pneumonia, what have you, to better understand where you want to focus and dial that in so that you can, as I say, just start. And then finally, what services will you deliver? Are you going to do patient navigation in the post-acute environment? Do you have a relationship with one SNF or 5 SNFs that you can really develop that relationship to be much more effective clinically for the patient? So ultimately, doing all those 5 steps, I think, is how you put a process together to begin your readmission reduction effort.
So let's actually dive a little bit more into the post-acute care, because throughout my career, I was fascinated that patients don't get transitioned into the post-acute care until the end of the day, because that's when the ambulances are available. And then they go into the post-acute care facility, in which they're being evaluated by the night team, which again, resources are less. And then they're called into a physician who's usually the covering physician that doesn't know anything about the case. So if anything were to go wrong, that's when the highest episodes of readmissions occur, because no one wants to take on the risk for their complications occurring. Is there anything you want to add to how to reinforce that post-acute care or how to improve on your networking?
It's really interesting, Tom. In my career, I've been so surprised when we've had these conversations with hospitals about their lack of relationships they have in their post-acute environment. And I say that because everybody's so busy managing the acute environment that oftentimes there's nobody dedicated to reaching out, building real deep relationships with the skilled nursing facilities or these community assets that are available. And sometimes when we'd go talk to a SNF or the administrator of the SNF or even the medical director, they were so grateful for the opportunity to collaborate with the hospital. All those people managing the SNF have the same goal in mind for the patient outcome, a fantastic outcome for the patient and an improved clinical performance. And they also want to tap into the clinical, cutting edge clinical approach that the hospital's taking on those particular disease states. So there's lots of learning opportunities. So really, honestly, it comes down to relationships and building those relationships, better understanding the networks. And you may find that the SNF that you thought you should be sending all your patients to, maybe there's a better environment for those patients in a different SNF. And again, you can't steer the patients, but you certainly can build better relationships to establish a better continuity of care with those organizations. So again, it really comes down to the fundamentals of, as you start your readmission reduction effort, what executives in the organization will begin to develop and dial in those relationships in the post-acute environment.
All about relationships, isn't it?
It really is.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Todd Baker for joining us. And if you'd like to contact Todd, we put his email address on the resource section of our podcast page. And if you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send your comments, please contact me at our email, modernpracticepodcast.com. We've posted a link on the resources as well. And please join us for other Modern Practice Podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.